Hello, welcome to the second episode of the E2B podcast. My name is Ewan Bennett, and this is my podcast. It's aimed at people that would like a career in music production or audio engineering, or both, or if you just like listening to it. On today's episode, I've got Ian Sadler. Ian is a producer from Whitstable who has worked with all sorts of bands, such as, just to name a few, Anave, Ohms, Cold Bones, Famine, Gender Roles, Fez, Fish Tank. Yeah, he's worked with a lot of people. We talked about how he first started producing music and how he's got to the point where he is today. So yeah, hope you enjoy, and here it is. Mr. Ian Sadler.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm good.
Good, good. Thank you for doing this.
That's all right. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to say some stuff.
I've been excited about this one.
How come?
Because you are part reason why I do what I do.
Oh, really?
You are.
Oh, wow.
And not only because I enjoy a lot of your work, but also because you gave me a lot of tips when I was first starting out.
So cool.
For those of you that don't know, which is everyone, I came to Ian's studio when was it? Blunderpuss,
like years ago. How long ago was that?
A couple of years ago.
Doesn't seem like that long ago.
No, we tracked some drums because I couldn't do it. And since then, you've been giving me a lot of advice, which I find very humbling, because a lot of people don't, which is weird. I've noticed, which is why I'm doing this.
Really?
Fucking okay. Give the world what they want.
Yeah, man.
But I still don't know how you started. So.
Yeah, okay. So, I guess I kind of came from it. I was sort of quite a computer nerd, so I like computers.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. Is that it? No. Like, I guess. So I came from it as a musician, and so my band did a few recordings in like a proper studio.
Mm.
I mean, it wasn't a massive studio; it was just like a small studio. And I remember it being quite expensive, like back in the day. And we did like a weekend, and we got the tracks back, and like we weren't that happy with kind of how they sounded.
Yeah.
So the next kind of record we did, we thought, rather than like go to a studio, let's just buy some equipment so we could kind of, you know, get some drum mics, get like a little interface, a little mixing desk, and yeah, just kind of like do it on our own.
Mm.
Our own kind of thing, and that was really good. And then what? I suppose, like, I guess their mates' bands would like listen to the stuff I'd done and be like, "Oh, can you record us as well?"
Yeah,
and it just kind of
snowballed
from there. Yeah, and kind of got to the stage where I could kind of charge a bit of money for it.
Mm-hmm. Where was you doing this? Was this just at your house or?
Yeah, like initially it was kind of like in my bedroom. I had like my mixing desk, and then we had a spare room, which we like set the drums up in. Had a little snake going between the rooms, which was quite cool.
Hmm.
And then obviously started to get complaints and things, as you do when you're in like a
boy,
house.
Boy, I know it.
Yeah, man. And so I just kind of got like a mobile rig together and just recorded anywhere I could, you know, other people's houses, like town halls, practice rooms.
Yeah.
And then eventually found like a kind of, it was like a practice room that had like a little booth, which had like a mixing desk and stuff in, so I could bring my stuff in. It was horrible though. It was
This
was in Dargate.
Right.
Which is not Margate.
Yeah, I know.
It's near Margate, but yeah.
It's like a strange place, isn't it?
Yeah. Have you ever been to the practice place there?
No.
But it was like, they used to let people smoke in there. And so there was like a thick layer of like,
ugh,
just scum on everything.
There's nothing worse.
It was nasty.
It?
But, you know, it served a purpose, and I did some of, like, the first kind of proper records there. Yeah. And then I guess I kind of got busy enough that when I, like, I think that that practice place got taken over by someone else, and they wanted to charge me a lot more to use the space than I had been. I'd been paying, like, I don't know, £5 an hour. But it was, nice. It was, you know, it was dog shit. Like, yeah. It wasn't very nice. And so when he, like, was like, oh, I want to charge you more, I was like, well, I don't want to, like, charge bands more to, like, record here. This isn't very good. Mm. And so I was like, I'll just kind of make my own space. And it took me quite a while to find somewhere. But I just, yeah, just took the plunge because I knew I could sort of hit the ground running with a bunch of clients and, yeah, kind of make a living out of it.
Straight off the bat.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, it was quite hard the first few kind of months, I guess, because I was ramping up from doing it as something that was quite, say, like part-time. Like, yeah. I'd have another job as well and do that on the side. And then to just suddenly kind of, I've got to pay rent on the building. I've got to pay, you know, bills and that.
I think that probably gives you a bit of push to really go for it as well.
Definitely.
It?
Yeah,
if you've got, like, things on stake, like money and stuff, then, you know, you're going to be like, right, let's get this bread.
You've got to do it. And so, you know, I did a few deals, you know, I wasn't charging very much, just trying to get people in and build up a kind of reputation, I guess. Yeah. And then here I am.
So was that
today?
It was this place you got?
That was this place here, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, I haven't gone anywhere still.
No, you're fine. This place is sick.
Yeah, why man. It does what I need to do, you know. It's not the biggest place. But it's just got everything that I need.
And it's yours. Like, you've built it up from scratch.
Yeah, exactly. And that's one of the problems when I had, like, when I was using other people's studios, it was like, I need to get in these dates and these dates and these dates, and then it wasn't available, and then the band couldn't do dates. And so having your own space is so much better in terms of, like, you know, you can just come in and do whenever you want.
Yeah,
you can stay as late as you want.
Absolutely, make as much noise as you want.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
which is good.
It's definitely worth it for you to have done it properly straight off the bat. Mm. Do you know what I mean? Because most people will probably cheap out on stuff like that, and then, well,
yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I guess it wasn't straight off the bat. I mean, I guess, like, I must have been doing it for about maybe 4 years before I got to the stage where I could have a studio. But
so after you got your studio, how long? So you said you had a good client base and you had people ready to go when you were coming in here.
Yeah, like I think I had like a band. I had bands like knocking down the door, basically. Like the first few records I did here, I did the Fish Tank record. You know, band called Fish Tank.
Yeah.
Did their first record here.
Henry.
That was it. Yeah, like, and you know, the walls weren't even painted. I don't think I had any acoustic treatment. I just had all the like the bales of what's it called, rock wall. Like, and so that was quite good actually, because we used the bales of rock wall to like build little amp forts and things.
Yeah,
because we tracked it live,
put them in the corners,
so we like made traps. Yeah, we made like little amp boxes and things. That was quite fun. And then I think the first band I ever did here was Scream Don't Whisper. Do you remember them? A local band.
What type of music was it?
I guess like You, Me at Six kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That kind of modern rock.
Yeah.
But like the day before their session, I didn't even have like the doors on. And I like messaged them. I was like, look, guys, I might have to cancel. And they're like, why? And I was like, I haven't got any doors. But I managed to get them on. And yeah, it was all right. It worked.
Making do with what you got.
That's it.
That's like a good thing, though, the fact that you came from recording in different environments all the time to then having to deal with, you know, working in this place while you were still building it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's probably quite good, because it gave you experience on working with
different environments, yeah. And sometimes, I guess when you don't know where you're going to be recording, it can be quiet. Sometimes it can be really good, like if you're tracking drums in a nice hall, you can get a really nice ambient sound. But then if you're in that same hall doing vocals and guitars, don't maybe want that big sound.
Mm.
So that's one of the good things of having your own space. You can learn the space, and you can, you know, I know how I can get a really roomy drum sound, you know, by putting mics in corridors or whatever. But then if I want a really dry guitar, I can kind of do that as well. Know what I'm doing with that, yeah.
Lovely. Did you have any, like, problems when starting up the studio? Because you make it sound like it was all just kind of go, and you were golden. So was there any, like, issues, like, I don't know. Obviously money is always an issue, but that's not what I mean. I mean, like, any people telling you that you shouldn't do it?
Not really. Like, I think I was quite good to be in a position where, like, my other half supported me in doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, so that was great. I don't know, I think finding somewhere initially was quite hard.
How did you go about that? Because I know that's a struggle that a lot of people have.
Yeah, because it's not like you can go to an estate agent and be like, I want a studio.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think I just looked on, like, commercial lettings.
Right.
And a lot of them were quite big spaces, like, you know, a big commercial thing, you know, thousands of pounds a month, and, you know, that's quite a big thing.
Mm.
And then when I sort of saw, I think I saw this place, or this set of build, like, units, these little kind of small business units, but there wasn't any available. And I think I messaged the guy and was like, oh, let me know if anything comes up.
Yeah.
And he did. And then I came down to look at it, and it was like, it's all right.
So
I can make that work.
What is this place? Because it's kind of hard to tell with all the walls up, and it's basically square.
It's basically a square. Not sure how many square feet it is. Probably like, I don't know.
I couldn't tell you.
I think it's like 10 metres by 10 metres, like the whole, like, space. And originally there was, like, nothing in here at all.
So it was just a big empty...
Yeah, it was just big walls or anything. Empty space with nothing in it.
Yeah.
I actually took a lot of inspiration when I was building the space from, like, Oz Craig's place.
I haven't been there. He's actually next up.
Yeah? Cool, man.
Yeah, we're doing it on the 18th.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah, because... I'd been to see his place, and he gets amazing sounds from there, and, like, it's a very similar size to my place. And I actually found, like, somewhere online on some acoustics forum, there's, like, I think it's John Sayer, something, some acoustic forum, but, like, Oz is, like, chatting about the studio with his designs and that, and there's actually, like, some of his designs for the studio on there. I found that really kind of interesting.
Yeah.
So I sort of based it on a similar kind of design to his.
Roughly, how long did it take for you to get from the thought of, right, I'm going to make a go of this and get a place to put a studio, to actually having it ready to go? I mean, I know you said that it was kind of barely ready to go when you got bands in first, but I mean, from...
I can't really remember how long it took me to, like, find the space. I imagine I was probably still, you know, recording, like, freelance and working where I was working until I found the place. It must have taken, I don't know, maybe 6 months. And then from once I got the place, it was about 3 months of, like, building out. Which was quite hard because obviously I wasn't making any money during those, like, 3 months.
Did you quit your job?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Scary.
Yeah, it was quite scary. Yeah. It was quite scary, but it was a job I didn't want to do. So it was it was quite liberating, and it also meant that I had to
get
my ass in gear and like just do it. And it was hard work, really hard work, because I'd never built anything, and I couldn't afford to pay people to build it.
You did it all on your own.
So I just did it all on my own, yeah.
Like
just,
friends or whatever.
Yeah, I got a few mates to help me out, like ripping down what was in here before with a sledgehammer. That was quite fun. But like a few times I got mates in to do stuff, and because like they knew less of what they were doing than I did. So a lot of it was just like me kind of telling them what to do and then not being able to do it and then me doing it. So it's kind of almost like a slow down. But yeah, I don't know. I found it quite good. It was quite satisfying to like just do it all. And
yeah, because you know exactly where everything is in this build, like not even you know, like cables and shit.
Yeah,
you know where all that stuff is. So if you need to access stuff, you can just
true. Although like I remember I had a problem with my internet, and like the internet plug, like the master plug, is like behind the wall in the live room. And I've got like an extension lead that runs all the way over the building and comes out in the little cupboard by the front door. And I thought the plug, because there's two sockets, and I thought one of them was broken or something. So I had to cut a massive hole in the wall and find and search for the plug again, which was quite annoying. But yeah.
I've been running cables through my walls in not even in my studio, just in my house.
Oh, really?
Oh, honestly, you should have seen it. It was like a comedy act. I was like, one of the HDMI cables broke, so I used that to attach a new cable to pull it through.
Oh, really?
And I was just
that's a good idea.
Up against
that's
the
innovative.
Wall, feet on the wall, like a wall climber, just like putting all my weight and pulling this cable through because it was stuck on something. I don't know what.
Yeah.
Probably the dead bird that fell down the chimney the other day. That was brutal. We had this bird that was on in the chimney, and it dropped down, and the chimney's blocked off in my room.
Oh, so it just like was
it just rotted,
was dying,
and then my room was full of flies.
Could you hear it?
I heard it fall down. Oh, I was in my room when it fell down, and then I could hear it every now and then just scratching, and that lasted for about 2 days.
That's really sad.
And then it stopped.
That is really sad.
It is really sad because I think it was a baby jackdaw.
Yeah,
jackdaw.
Is there no way you could have got it out?
No.
I mean, I guess
it's completely blocked.
Yeah,
because it's happened before, but when it happened before, it wasn't blocked.
Should have got on the roof and like fished it out.
We were pulling this like bird out by its feet out of this tiny little gap, and it eventually came out and then just flew off.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. No, you wouldn't want to get up on top of my roof. Building's like over 100 years old.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I would not want to. Nah, I'm good.
More trouble than it's worth.
Exactly. But anyway, yeah, so I was running cables and yeah, it's a fucking nightmare.
Yeah.
I didn't even get it through in the end. I just gave up. It's for a new TV, and it can just stay on the floor for a bit.
Yeah, man.
Until I find a better solution. Anyway, let's completely change the subject. What's your opinion on drum triggers?
Because
I know a lot of people
on drum triggers
either love them and think they're really good, or absolutely hate them and never want to touch them.
I like them. Yeah, I don't know. I see that. They've got a place. But I think, I know why people hate them.
They
and
think
like,
it's cheating.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I think definitely when I first started recording, and the whole kind of drum trigger thing kind of started out, it was very easy to just like, you could just like not bother. Like
don't have to worry so much about the recording kind of thing.
Yeah. And it's very easy to just stick a sample on and be like, wow, this sounds great.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna, you know, not so much I'm not gonna bother getting a good sound, but it makes you almost not wanna like work as hard.
And if you're
working in a genre that kind of it fits like
metal.
Heavy kind of metal kind of stuff, and you can kind of get away with it. But like I listen back to like those recordings when I had that kind of mindset. Mm. And you know, they sound awful. They sound like shit. And I'm not proud of them. And I think it's because I didn't know how to tune drums. I don't know. I guess I was just young and didn't really know what I was doing.
How old were you when you started?
Fucking.
When you got it, when you moved
like
in
maybe
here.
Maybe 18.
When you moved in here?
Not when I moved in here. No, this would have been before then.
Right.
This would have been before, like long before then.
Yeah. 18.
Yeah, but I think if you don't know how to tune a drum kit, and then you put mics on things, and it's never going to sound good.
No.
And then you kind of realise you can just put this sample on, and it sounds amazing. And yeah,
it just makes you not want to learn stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of a rabbit hole you can go down that's not a good one. And a lot of my real early mixes sound awful. But that kind of gave me the the energy to like learn how to really like record drums. And
I never used to think it was that important when I was at college, because we'd always, you know, be recording there was two I guess courses, the live course and the technical course. So I did the music technology, and people that would do the music performance course, sorry, not live, the performance course. So we'd record them performing, and that's kind of how they crossed over the two courses. And I never ever used a room mic in the 2 years that I was at college, and they never.
That's mental, yeah.
But now, that is, in my opinion, one of the most important microphones on a drum kit is your room mics, because you can do so much with it to manipulate the sound to make it sound like you're in a massive room or a small room or you know.
It just makes it sound real.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. And I just find it mental that I never did that in college.
It's like an epiphany, isn't it, when you first realise that room mics sound amazing. Yeah. You're like, wow.
This is why a lot of drum recordings sound good and, you know, mine didn't. And yeah, it's crazy. It's just most of the snare sound comes from a room mic, I think. Mm. Like, if you actually solo a snare mic, it doesn't, half the time it doesn't even sound like a snare. You're just getting the attack from it.
Yeah, that's it. I think a lot of the depth and the length, like the length of the note or the sound, comes from the room mics. Like if you take the room mics out, you've got a very kind of dry, short, attacky kind of sound. Mm. And then it's like all the body.
Yeah, yeah.
Comes from 100%. Like the room. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I remember the first time I used a room mic. I think it was actually at the end of college, but I just stuck a condenser at the back of the room and then whacked a load of reverb on it. I was like, here we go.
Exactly.
There we go.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's important for people to know.
Yeah,
and also
definitely.
Drum tuning as well. So important.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, and that's the thing. Like I find when you've got your, we've got the drums in tune, sounding the best they can sound, like, you don't need samples.
Just making your life easier.
Like a lot of times, when you do that, you'll listen to the drums back and you'll be like, you know, they sound like they've got samples in them anyway, because they just sound
good.
Yeah, exactly. And I still do use samples, like, but more of like a blend thing.
Yeah.
And more of like a creative tool.
Yeah.
Like if you need a bit more low end that you're not getting from the main snare, you can, you know, maybe blend in a sample, or if you need more attack.
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, sometimes it's physically impossible to get the drum sound that is needed for that type of music or whatever. You know, depending on where you are, if you're in like a, you know,
who knows.
But I think they're good for that type of thing, because you can definitely add to the recording. And that's what people want you to do in the end.
At the
end of the day, don't they? So why would I don't get why people get so uptight about people using samples, especially when you are using it in a creative way. Like, fair play if you're replacing the whole kit with samples, just because for whatever reason. Either you can't get the drum sound you want, or you're just too lazy to get the drum sound.
Yeah, I guess if it's a lazy thing, then that's bad.
Yeah, but if it's like impossible for you to, you know, get the drum sound you want, then I say
yeah, true.
But don't use that as an excuse not to learn exactly how to get a good drum sound. Because exactly. I never used samples up until recently, actually. Like, all my drum recordings last year were natural. Most of them this year are still natural, but I got Slate Trigger.
Mm.
The one that I think you use that, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. To, like, blend samples. And it can do you favours. Or if a drummer's hit...
Inconsistently,
yeah. And maybe like hit a tom weird or something.
Yeah,
you just, or if like a microphone's moved halfway through recording, you don't realise, or what, because that can happen. Especially if you're in a different room to them and can't see through a window.
I once had a band, and like we'd gone off for lunch, and I turned the phantom power off or something, I turned off like all my preamps, and then when we came back in, I didn't turn on these extra preamps we had. So all the drums we recorded after lunch, the tom mics weren't on.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it was like, shit.
So you'd have to use a sample.
Yeah, I mean, I think what I did in the end is, I think at the end of it, I got samples of the kit, like his kit.
Right, yeah,
so
yeah.
So I took some samples, and then... like using the overheads, I like isolated the toms, kind of the transients, and then made like a trigger track that would then trigger the real tom.
Yeah, yeah.
So it actually worked fine, and you know, the ones from before lunch sounded all right, so that was good. But yeah, it was one of those moments where you're just like, shit.
Yeah. I had one of them the other day.
Band didn't notice though, so it's fine.
That's all right. I opened up a project the other day, with track drums, and one of the tracks was missing. And I was like, fuck. Where's that gone?
The whole song was missing.
Oh, man.
What happened to that?
I think I must have just deleted it by accident.
Or just not saved it after you'd done that one, maybe?
Well, it's on autosave, so I really don't know what happened. I think I generally just deleted it, not paying attention to what.
Are the audio files not on the...
Right, so I managed to... I went back into, because it does record them, even if you delete them. It keeps the files within the project.
The physical files.
So I had to go back through all of the takes that we did that whole day.
Oh, man.
And listen to each individual one and find the right one.
Yeah.
And then find the right one for the rest of the microphones. It took me about an hour to get this one track back. But I was so glad when I got it back. I was like, fuck. It was like a really good take as well. I was like, shit, I've just deleted one of their songs.
That's mental.
Yeah, I don't even know how I did it.
But no, I feel your pain. That's definitely happened to me before.
Yeah.
Like, it's when you've got to drag all those audio files back in and figure out what the best takes were.
Yeah.
And especially if it's a multi-mic source, like, I don't know. Yeah, like drums, I guess, prime example.
Yeah.
And then you've got to make sure the right takes of each one and make sure they're still in phase.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah, absolute nightmare.
It was a bit of a get the old heart going.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, it worked out fine in the end. And
make sure you back up.
Yeah, I do all the time. I on that.
Yeah, man.
And I've got another one as well. External hard drives, because I just pointed at it and it's not video. Yeah, external hard drives. Just back your shit up. Because
you should have your stuff backed up in three places.
Yeah.
Or
three locations.
No, it should be three locations, yeah. So you should have like your main version and then two backups,
right?
One off-site in case it burns down. It doesn't, but I guess theft.
I mean,
I think I have four. I think I've got the main one, I've got like a cloud one that just constantly syncs, and I've got an internal like backup that every hour it just backs up. And then I've got like an external one that I say every day, but it's usually not every day. It's usually like when I remember.
Yeah.
And then I'll take that one home with me.
Okay. That's a good idea.
Just in case.
Yeah, definitely. 100%. I'm sure a lot of... that's like one of my biggest fears is my studio burning down. Man. I had dreams about it before and woken up and looked out my window to make sure my cabin's still there. Yeah.
I guess made of wood.
Yeah.
So.
It's just so flammable.
Yeah.
Like,
I guess that's the trouble with this building is like there's no... it's probably not safe, but there's like there's no fire alarm or anything.
I suppose it's just a garage, isn't it?
Yeah, kind of. But we had like a fire safety guy come round not that long ago, maybe like 3 months, from the council, or the, you know, the person who owns the building. Mm. He was just like, there's no point in me doing this. Like, it's just, there's, you know, you, like, my unit was quite good. Like, I've got all my fire extinguishers.
Yeah.
And he was like, are they provided by, you know, your landlord? And I was like, no, I got these myself, you know. Mm. And I sort of asked, oh, I should put like a fire alarm in. And he was like, not really, because
you'd see it.
Yeah, there is that, but it's like all these other units, like there's no like interlinking system.
Yeah.
And like, so right next door, I've got, it's like a carpenter's thing. So there's so much wood, and I mean, they've probably got chemicals. I think they burn the wood in there as well. Like you often smell like, wood burning, and I think there's like a chimney or something. So yeah, man, that could like go up in smoke and you just wouldn't know.
Mm.
Wouldn't know.
Would it get to here?
I don't know.
Is it separated?
Not really.
What is in between these places, these buildings? Like, because is it just like a little cavity and then the next one starts?
Yeah, I think it's just a cavity plasterboard and then the next one starts, yeah. So,
interesting. Who's next door? Who's over there?
Next door, that's a solar panel company.
Have you ever had noise complaints?
No, because they don't spend time in there. Like, before that was a solar panel thing, it was a glass glazier person. Mm. And he had, like, his desk, what would be next, right next to, like, the end of my live room. Mm. And he must have been able to hear
stuff. But he didn't say anything?
No, not really. I mean, he would have his radio on and stuff.
Mm.
And he was all right. He was quite a chill guy, so... Yeah.
That's right.
But, no, never. I've had one complaint once, when I was recording really loud bass, and I think it was upstairs and along some accountancy place.
Yeah.
They were just like, turn it down a bit, please. Yeah. And I was like, yeah. And it was fine. Yeah. But I've never had a complaint.
See,
since.
That's what you need. Nice people just being like, do you mind if you turn it down? Not what I had.
Yeah.
Had a neighbour come over and shout at me the other day, like full on shout at me. And I told you this story. But
yeah,
that was fun. So now I'm not able to record drums at mine anymore.
Yeah, but, man.
We'll sort that out. Yeah. But yeah. What is your favourite bit of gear?
Bit of gear in here, I think I'm gonna say my distressors.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The newest.
They are the newest. And they just sound good on anything. So yeah. they're compressors and like, you can put them on any setting and they'll pretty much just sound good.
Yeah.
But, yeah, for vocals, I use them for vocals, drum rooms. I haven't used them, like, on a mix, but a lot of producers use them as, like, their parallel drum bus kind of thing.
Right, yeah.
You need to figure out how to set that up. Watched a video recently of Eric Valentine doing a drum mix and he was using distressors like for the main part of his sound, sort of came from that, so that's like a kind of
I guess you just have to send it out and then back in. That's what I do with my Lindell audio compressors.
Okay.
So I send the signal out to whatever it is and then just record the input again.
Yeah, man.
But then you have to press record to be able to print it, basically.
Yeah,
so it is a bit of a long-winded way of doing it.
You got to print it in till you got to sort of work with it till you're happy, then print it.
Yeah. So it is a bit of a...
And then if you want to change the settings, you just have to do it all again.
Yeah.
And that's the trouble, I think, because like, I'm constantly tweaking things.
So do you use in-the-box compressors when you're mixing?
Yeah. I just use the... is it the Slate 1176 one?
Mm.
That compressor sounds great.
Yeah, man.
I love 1176s.
I think that's what the Lindells.
It's supposed to. They're really weird, though.
They are.
I'm gonna get rid of those, I think, because they're just like.
My one's just started making weird noises.
Oh, have you got the same one?
Yeah, I got one of them.
I find like. You can have no compression at all. Then all of a sudden, shitloads of compression.
Yeah, it's the input is really
weird, isn't it? Yeah. It's almost like it's, I mean, what is it? It's a 4-to-1 ratio.
Yeah.
But it's almost like it's more than that when it's, I don't know. Maybe it's just a metering thing, but it does seem to be quite grabby.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, like if you,
you
look
can
at,
hear it,
if you look
you
at
hear
the gain reduction meter, all of a sudden it's just...
All of a sudden it's like pinned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mental. You've moved it like a hair.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it is strange. Because I think I asked you that when I got it. I was like, is it supposed to be like this? And you were like, yeah, mine does it. But I don't know. It's just started making weird noises. I don't really know what to do with it now, to be honest. I don't use it enough to warrant getting it fixed.
Yeah, and plus it would be quite expensive to fix.
Yeah.
Like my my Lindell preamps, like the buttons don't stay on anymore. Like that. They kind of do if you like wiggle them in the right way.
Is that just the light though, or is it the actual button?
No, it's the actual thing.
Oh.
Yeah, see, it will work, but yeah. They're just
interesting.
But it would be quite expensive to get them fixed. Mm. I don't really use them.
So you've got the Golden Age preamps as well?
Yeah.
That's another thing I stole off you.
Yeah, I mean, they're great. I really like them.
They are a clone of a Neve 1073?
Yeah.
But they sound,
I don't know how close. I don't know how close they are to one.
I think it's probably the closest you could get.
I think it's pretty close.
Because they use decent... Well, I think they use decent components, don't they?
Yeah.
You probably know more about them than I do, to be honest.
Yeah, so I think the circuit's pretty similar.
Mm.
I think the transformers are... Like, I think they're like Chinese transformers.
Yeah.
Rather than like the really expensive ones.
What are they new? They're like 200 and something new, aren't they?
Yeah, about 250 maybe.
Just came second hand though.
Yeah, I paid about 120 per one.
Mm.
Which is pretty good.
That's good, yeah. Yeah, I've only got one and that costs 180.
Yeah.
But I've been searching for Solar. Honestly, they're like gold dust now, I think. I think everyone's commented on how good they are.
They sound really good.
Mm. So are they your main preamps?
Pretty sick. Yeah. I've got... so those six Nevy ones, which I use them mainly on vocals, guitars, and close drum mics.
Right, yeah.
But they're quite coloured.
Mm.
And then I've got some more transparent ones, like the Audient ones and the SSL ones. And then the Focusrite ones are quite nice.
Yeah,
but they're kind of like in between, sort of. They're still transformer based, so they've got a bit of colour to them, but they're not kind of as extreme as the Neves.
Mm.
Yeah.
What's your next purchase, or your dream purchase, rather.
Oh, my dream purchase.
Like, if you had infinite money, someone just gave you £1 million, what gear would you buy?
£1 million? I'd buy all the gear.
All the gear.
I'd just buy all of it.
Okay, so someone gave you...
Oh, I just got to buy one piece.
One piece of gear.
One piece
and you
of
have
gear.
The, whatever it is, someone's like, I'll buy it for you.
Oh, man.
But you get it. No matter what the cost is.
I don't really...
So I'm asking this question, but I have no idea either.
Yeah, I mean,
probably
I guess. Do you know what? I guess.
Desk.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Like a big Neve desk,
because
you're getting a lot for your money there.
Yeah.
But no, to have like a whole like rack of like 1073s with the EQs, that would be really nice.
Yeah, that'd be mental.
But I don't know. No, there's not really. Yeah, I don't know. There's not really anything I want at the moment.
Mm.
I'm kind of quite happy with...
Yeah, you've got...
I'm happy with what I've got.
Got a good selection.
And I can make... I guess, like...
So now you're at the point where you can... Well, I'm at... Both me and you are at the point where we can do what we want to do.
Mm.
But now it's just getting bits of gear that would make it...
Yeah.
Funner.
funner.
Or better.
Or, like... I think it's nice to get gear that... is of use to like bands in the studio, do you know what I mean? So like guitars, basses, things like that. I don't know really. I'd like to get a new drum kit.
Right.
Yeah, like something real nice.
What have you got now?
It's a Shine Definition. It's like, I guess it's like a cheap SJC.
Yeah, yeah. Tell you what, my Mapex Mars, I love that drum kit.
Yeah.
It costs, what, sick, 500 and something. It sounds so good. Like, for what it is, it sounds really good.
It's all in that heads and the tuning.
Yeah, like, yeah.
I mean, I think there is something to be said for...
What's your favourite drum head?
Favourite drum head
for, like,
for what?
Toms.
For Toms, G2. G1's on the bottom.
I need to try Evans. I'm a Remo guy, the Remo clear pinstripe guy at the moment.
Yeah.
But to be fair, I need to change my Toms
theme, yeah.
So I might give it a go.
Yeah, I've used pinstripes before and they sound good.
Mm.
Just a little bit different.
Yeah. Just different.
But I quite like the G2s. They sound quite open sounding. Mm. And so you can, you know, you've got the option to put, you know, a bit of gel on them to, like, make them less open sounding.
Yeah. You don't want something that's too muffled off the
back. Yeah, exactly.
I was using coated heads for a while, and they did sound really good, but then I realised it's probably better off to buy clear heads for practicality, because I guess so many different types of, like, people coming in to record.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're right.
If you've got something that's quite wide open at the beginning, you can always dampen it, but
definitely.
You can't really do it the other way.
Definitely.
So, yeah, that's a little
and
tip.
And snare, like, just an ambassador.
Mm.
Yeah, nothing more. Like, best head. Although I've had, I don't know, like, I change my mind all the time. Like, I used to hate Emperor X's. You've seen those? They're, like, these,
so.
The thickest head. Because I think they're designed to, like, you know, you just can't break them. And so they're really thick. They've got, like, a dot on them.
So, yeah, I think they're similar to the one that I use. I don't think they're the same. I use the coated X reverse dot.
Oh, okay.
So
yeah.
I think they're fairly similar.
Similar. But I used to hate them, recording them, because they were so... It was so warm sounding, and there was no, like, I don't know, it was all kind of attack and no like high end, because it's such a thick head. But then I had a drummer come in and use that, and it sounded sick.
Yeah, I think it so much depends on the drummer.
It depends on the drummer, and it depends on the record. It depends on what's right for the for the song. But I find with just an ambassador, you can do so much with it. Like, if you want a really ringy open sound, it's perfect for that.
Mm.
You know, if you want to dampen it down, it's perfect for that. It's just really versatile head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. Well, staying on the topic of gear, do you think good gear in a studio is important? So a lot of people will
yes.
be like... A lot of people would be like...
Why would you want bad gear in the studio?
Well, right, okay, not... I worded that wrong, but do you think... Right, do you think the producer's more
like
important or the gear is more important?
I think the producer's more important, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Because would you want a bad producer using really nice gear and not really
no,
know what they're doing?
No, you wouldn't.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, and it's, you know, like, as long as the gear is... good enough,
yeah.
I guess. Like, I mean, for instance, like, you know those Behringer preamps? I gave you those preamps, didn't I? Did they work? Did you get them
the
working
AD
in the
converter?
End?
No, it's still in my cupboard.
Is
I need
it,
to
is it?
Take
yeah,
a look
see
it.
If you can sort that. But those, I think it's the ADA 8000. But, you know, they're like, what? I don't know, you can pick them up for like £100 or less.
Yeah. I literally just use it for analog to digital.
Yeah, there. but they sound fine.
Yeah,
you know, then I think with a lot of these modern preamps, they just make the sound louder. Like, they don't fuck with the sound.
Yeah, don't colour it much.
Don't colour it much, and yeah, so you know, you can do a lot with it in the box. But yeah, like, just with those cheap preamps, you can make really good sounding records.
Yeah. So I told the story on the one I did with Dan last episode, that my old band went to a studio and had all this really nice gear. I think I've told you this before a while ago.
I think so.
And the result was not good at all. So I think that just proves that.
So was that the, was that down to the producer, you think, that was?
I think so. Yeah. He did some questionable things, like putting drum gates.
Didn't he gates
on the toms?
Yeah.
So were going they into the?
So were they gates. Analog gates? Mm-hmm. That's mental. Mm.
So when I got the stems back, they were just insane.
Yeah.
And actually, so we went there just.
Why? I don't know why anyone would analog gate.
I don't know. I really don't know. But we went there just to record stems, and I was going to mix it.
Yeah.
So we got all the stems. I was like, yeah, it sounds.
So were you there when he was doing it?
Yeah, but I didn't realise, honestly. Yeah, like at the time, I wasn't concentrating on being a producer because I was playing.
Oh, and were you the drummer?
No, I was playing bass, but we were doing guide tracks and stuff. Yeah. So it was, yeah.
Yeah, man.
So I didn't even notice until I got them back, and I was like, what the fuck is that with these? And I messaged him. I was like, why is... Can you take the gates off and send them to me? He was like, oh, I did them on the way in. I was like, why did you do that?
Yeah.
And there's literally just drum hits that just don't exist. Like, you can hear, there's like, no bleed, and then all of a sudden it would just be like a kick or whatever. And yeah, it was weird. It was weird.
Yeah, that's mental.
But we made do.
Yeah. You do. Yeah. I mean, and I think it's kind of good to deal with things like that as well.
It gives you practice for like
exactly.
if you need to do it again. And I think just mixing badly recorded stuff is quite fun because
it's a challenge, isn't
it? Yeah, I recently did some live mixing for a friend's band, and they recorded it at a pub, so it wasn't going to be great anyway. And it was fine, like it wasn't terrible. It could be a lot worse, but it was a good challenge to. You know, make it sound listenable because it definitely wasn't listenable before.
Yeah,
like I spent 2 hours manually doing volume automation on the vocals to get the bleed out in certain bits and balance it because the compressor was obviously just not doing it and it'd bring the bleed up.
The compressor makes it worse. Yeah,
but like even if I like gated it and then compressed it, it was just not having any.
Then
of
you
it.
Get like an unnatural kind
of. So, it took a while, but I like doing stuff like that.
Yeah, I think it makes you a better engineer, I think.
Yeah.
Because you have to, you know, you have to be really creative with EQ and, their skills that you can then transfer to the next project.
Mm, 100%. 100%. What do you think makes a good producer?
What do I think makes a good producer?
Mm.
Lots of things.
Like, reel them off.
Reel them off. Okay, so I think
this is what the people need to know.
I think you need to be. Don't know. It's a very hard question.
It's very personal, I think, as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Because,
like, yeah. I mean, I think. I guess. I don't know what. I guess what makes me a good producer. I guess I'm quite good, easy to get on with. I think.
See, that's a lot of thing that people don't necessarily think about is that you're not just there to do the music job, you're also there to make the bands and whoever you're recording feel comfortable working with you, and it's the personal skills. And
I mean, maybe that is the most important thing, you know, making a band feel, because ultimately they're here to make like the best record that they can,
something that they're proud of.
And especially with music, it's such an emotional kind of thing.
Mm.
You know, you want them to be in the right headspace that they can deliver to their best and get the performance out of them. And if they feel like uncomfortable, they're not gonna be in that headspace, I guess.
Yeah.
So I think it's like important to be able to deal with people.
Absolutely.
And it can be hard because, like, you know, as a producer, like what you need to get out of them, like you need to get the best takes or whatever.
It is a difficult job. Like when you know you've got, for example, a vocalist in the live room and they're really trying, but you know that they could give more. It's really hard to put that across to them
because
you don't want to be like, you know,
you don't want to make them feel like they're
shit.
Exactly. You don't want to be like, no, that's rubbish. Do it better.
Yeah. I think that's a very good thing to practice and just be aware of more than anything. Like if you're thinking of doing this as a job or do it as a
people
job.
People skills.
Yeah. Just Big knowing time. Knowing what is okay to say Big to people
yeah.
and making them feel comfortable, because at the end of the day, that's what's going to give you the best performance and that makes your job easier at the end of the day as well.
And getting the best out of people. And I don't know, if someone's struggling with something, being able to help them do it in the right kind of way. And also be able to put your ideas across in a way that's not like, you know, your way's, you know, wrong.
Yeah.
Let's do it my way kind of thing. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, like if
do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly what I mean. Like if there's a, I don't know, it could be structural, it could be just how they play something. If you put your idea across to them, like half the time I'll just be like, look, try it your way and then we'll try it my way and then we'll see. We'll take vote kind of thing. Like you don't want to be like, right, we're doing it this way. Do you know what I mean? Or like, I think it'll be great this way and the way you're doing it isn't good. Like,
yeah, definitely.
That's not the way to go.
I guess ultimately you need to make what they want to make.
Yeah, because they're the ones that are paying you.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's your reputation.
Exactly. Exactly that. So it's dealing with that.
Mm.
And that is important. And I think, I guess the second most important thing is being good.
Yeah.
Just being good at getting a good sound, you know, that's the thing.
It's the most important thing.
Yeah. I guess those two things.
Yeah.
People skills and being good, you know.
Good answer.
I guess that's quite being good is quite a massive thing.
I think take your time to learn stuff. Like that's definitely something that I wish I'd done differently when first starting out, is being like, rather than being like, okay, I know how to do that, let's move on to the next thing, just actually being like, wait, do I actually know what, you know, phase issues are and shit like that, like stuff that people might not want to spend time looking up, but stuff that's actually really
very important.
Yeah. And I think that that's something that I rushed on when I was first starting up, is just not actually learning why stuff does what it does and just being like, oh yeah, I can record that.
Yeah.
And I think learning,
stick a mic on that,
that's, yeah like mic positioning and stuff. Yeah. I wish I did spend a bit more time on that, like, because now I feel like I'm in a position where, you know, I do know a lot more than what I did when I started, but I'm always still learning shit, and I've definitely changed my mindset in how I go about it, because I know that I don't know everything that there is to know, and when there is something that I don't know, I'm like,
well, you know,
actually, I'm gonna,
it's like,
spend
it's
some time,
like,
learning that.
It's like when you were first talking to me about getting preamps, and I was like, yeah man, get a golden age pre,
and
you're like, nah, I'm getting this gold mic thing.
Oh yeah
and
that's a good preamp.
It is, yeah, it's all right. It's not a bad preamp, actually, to be fair. But
you're dead. Yeah, exactly. Mate, yeah, and now I've actually got one of them, and I use that more than use the gold mic.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just because I just got stuck in my ways. I'm very much like that. If I want to do something, I'm doing it.
No, but I
and
think
it takes a lot to convince me not
to. I think it's important though to go through that process and, you know, make mistakes. And that's, I think that's the thing with doing this is, you just have to keep doing it and keep making mistakes.
Yeah.
And then you learn from those mistakes.
Yeah.
And try not to dwell over things, really.
Yeah.
Like with mixing, like do a mix, finish it. If you're not happy with it, make sure the next one is that little bit better.
Mm.
And then eventually,
100%.
You know, rather than keep dwelling on little things,
I think
which I'm really bad for.
I do the same, because I'll always look back on my old mix and be like, God, I can't believe I did that. But then the other part of my head's like, well, you do different now and it's better for that. So it's kind of...
Yeah, exactly. Different techniques that you learned.
Yeah. Like, I feel like things. I'm constantly improving on my mixing with some excuses, like just some things are just really hard to mix. Do you know what I mean? You get the odd... We'll be careful what I say now, but you know what I mean. You get the
You mean like
the odd thing that you just can't help,
like musician wise.
Yeah, no matter what you do, it's just not going to sound great because of how they've done it.
Yeah,
and
just re-record it yourself. Don't do that.
Yeah. I'm going to ask you one more question, then we'll wrap it up.
Okay.
One bit of advice for a newbie producer. I guess that kind of ties into the question that I just asked you.
Yeah, I'd say one bit of advice I would give a new producer is just do it. Just keep doing it. Do you know what I mean?
Do you work like, for Nike?
Yeah, just do it, man. But I mean, I think like for instance, like when I went to uni and did like a music course. Mm. And like when I was there, I was, you know, all the people that were on the course as well were just like, you know, they were just learning the stuff. Mm. But like I was kind of doing it at the same time. So we had like a spare room. And so we set up a little studio in our like student house, and I had bands coming in and recording like for free or for not much money. And just like doing it, just do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, and be as the best you can, because then you'll get work.
Yeah.
I think
a lot of people learn by doing things as opposed to, I certainly do. I'm definitely not an academic person. Like, you give me a piece of paper with instructions on how to do something on it, and I'll just be like, fuck knows, mate. But if you
don't
put it in front of me, I can't. I'm not a manual guy, which sucks, because I should be. Because then I don't know how to do things. But I feel like,
I guess it's a balance.
If you put something in front of me, and eventually I'll work it out my own way.
Yeah.
And I think that's important thing as well, is to find your own style about doing things, because
that's
how you become unique from everyone else. And there's a lot of people trying to do the same thing. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, on that note, thank you very much for doing this. I appreciate
it. That's fine. I've enjoyed it.
It's
been good.
Been meaning to do it for a while.
Mm. Yeah.
Let's go get some filthy food.
Yes.
Cool. Cheers, guys.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm going to try and get people on more regularly, because I realised it's been about 2-3 months since the first episode. And ideally, I want to try and do one at least once a month, if not once every 2 months. Something like that. It's just finding the producers to talk to and arranging around them, because everyone's always very busy, which is just how the industry is. So, yeah, thank you very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed it, and bye-bye.